Welcome to This Week in Nephrology. This week, we're covering 10 notable papers spanning how we measure and treat chronic kidney disease, the paraprotein and immune interface with kidney disease, and transplantation and dialysis care delivery. Let's dive in. We start with how we treat and how we measure progressive kidney disease. In nephrology dialysis transplantation, Lovshin reviews combination pharmacotherapy in type 2 diabetes with chronic kidney disease, a combination that affects something on the order of a third to 40% of everyone with type 2 diabetes. The argument is that renin-angiotensin blockade, sodium glucose cotransporter 2 inhibitors, non-steroidal mineralocorticoid receptor antagonists, and glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists act through distinct pathways, and that recent trial evidence supports using them simultaneously rather than sequentially, with parallel reductions in kidney and cardiovascular risk and less need to start dialysis. The practical message for clinic is to stop treating these agents as a stepwise ladder, in which each drug waits for the previous one to fail, and instead to build the regimen in the higher-risk patient with an eye on all four pillars. Alongside that, Zakali and Levine in the same journal make the case for reframing how we judge those drugs in trials. They argue that estimated glomerular filtration rate slopes, competing risk methods, and pragmatic registry-based trials need to be read together rather than in isolation, and they offer a translation that is genuinely useful at the bedside, thinking of a slope difference as kidney time, or approximately years of dialysis delayed at a population level. They also reframe competing risk as a clinical problem, not merely a statistical one, which matters in dialysis and advanced chronic kidney disease populations, where death competes with the kidney endpoint you are trying to prevent. Still on measurement, Kidney International published work from Titan and colleagues that should give pause to anyone who treats an estimated filtration rate as a clean number. Using genome-wide data from roughly 470,000 participants in the UK Biobank, they identified 52 loci specific to serum creatinine and 48 specific to cystatin C, variants associated with the biomarker but not with filtration itself. The creatinine-specific loci map to energy and muscle metabolism, the cystatin C loci to inflammation, cancer, wound healing, and immune modulation. When they built polygenic scores, individual-level genetic bias in creatinine-based estimated filtration rate averaged just under 4 milliliters per minute and ranged across roughly 9 units between the extremes, and this bias differed by self-reported race. Bias in the cystatin C equation was smaller on average, but still spanned several units. Crucially, the effect was validated against measured filtration rate in two independent cohorts. The clinical read is that some of the discordance we see between creatinine and cystatin C estimates is heritable and unmeasurable at the bedside, which strengthens the case for measured clearance when a treatment decision, a transplant listing, a chemotherapy dose, a dialysis start, turns on a narrow margin. Our second theme is the paraprotein and the immune kidney. In the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, Sanders offers a translational synthesis of myeloma kidney, integrating the two lesions that have often been discussed separately. Monoclonal free light chains precipitate with uromodulin to form obstructing casts in the distal nephron, and they independently activate and injure proximal tubular epithelium. Both mechanisms drive tubulointerstitial inflammation and fibrosis, and both can occur alone or synergize. The emphasis on the physicochemical properties and the sheer quantity of light chain as predisposing factors, and on identifiable precipitating factors, reinforces something actionable, that this injury is potentially reversible, and that reducing light chain burden and removing precipitants early is the therapeutic window. Set against that, a multicenter French study in nephrology dialysis transplantation from Desouchon colleagues asks whether an incidental paraprotein changes the trajectory of ANCA-associated glomerulonephritis. Among 332 patients, monoclonal gammopathy was found in about 15%, and those patients were older, more often male, more hypertensive, with lower albumin, but with comparable kidney function, ANCA subtype, and histology. On unadjusted analysis, the gammopathy roughly doubled mortality and raised infection and cancer risk, but after adjustment, none of those associations remained independent. There was no effect on end-stage kidney disease or relapse, and over a median follow-up of nearly 5 years, not a single patient progressed to myeloma or a related malignancy. The message is reassuring. Treat the pear protein in this setting as a marker of age and comorbidity rather than a disease modifier, and avoid letting it derail immunosuppression decisions while still following it in a standardized way. Our third theme is transplantation and the delivery of kidney care. The ERA registry study in nephrology dialysis transplantation from Oliveras and colleagues is a sobering one. Across more than 134,000 adults receiving a first kidney transplant in 12 European countries between 2005 and 2022, about 15% had diabetes as the cause of kidney failure, and their mortality was nearly twice that of recipients without diabetes, roughly 46 versus 25 deaths per 1,000 person years, driven mainly by excess cardiovascular and infection. What stands out is what did not happen. Unlike the general population, age and sex standardized all-cause and cardiovascular mortality among transplant recipients did not improve over 18 years, and the cardiovascular gap between recipients with and without diabetes did not narrow. Both groups saw a rise during the COVID-19 pandemic, driven by infection. That is an implementation indictment as much as a biological one, and it argues for far more aggressive cardiovascular and infection risk management after transplant. Two reviews address the pathway into and out of transplantation. In transplantation, Busnina and colleagues survey functional metrics and biomarkers measured during ex situ machine perfusion, renal blood flow, endocrine function, immune mediators, markers of cellular stress and injury, metabolic and imaging-based readouts, noting that roughly 18% of donor kidneys are still discarded on largely subjective assessment, and that almost none of these candidate markers are clinically validated for predicting post-transplant outcome. In Kidney 360, Alfieri and colleagues review peritoneal dialysis across the transplant pathway, from waitlist bridge to management after graft failure, and are candid that the evidence is limited and fragmented, particularly on whether to retain or remove the peritoneal catheter after transplantation. Both papers are best read as maps of what we still do not know. Two service delivery studies round out the week, with opposite verdicts. In the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, Jayasinghe and colleagues report a hub-and-spoke mainstreaming model across four tertiary centers in which nephrologists receive training, resources, and case-based discussion so they could order and interpret genomic tests in their own clinics. Across just over 1,000 tests, the diagnostic yield was 34% and held steady throughout. And importantly, yield was comparable whether testing was ordered by a specialist genomic service or by a local nephrologist. The proportion of testing done in mainstream nephrology settings rose from under a quarter to about three quarters, with more than twice as many unique ordering clinicians and without cannibalizing the multidisciplinary clinics. In contrast, Kidney 360 reports a negative trial from Beer and colleagues. 190 dialysis patients across 23 Australian sites randomized to a dietary phosphate app plus standard care or standard care alone. The primary outcome, change in serum phosphate at 3 months, showed no significant difference between groups. Phosphate fell by about 6-7% in both arms. The intervention arm continued declining to about 9% at 6 months, but that too was not statistically significant. Exploratory analyses suggested older women engaged best, but that is hypothesis generating only. For now, a standalone dietary app should not displace dietitian contact. If you only have time for one paper this week, make it the ERA registry mortality analysis. It tells you that for kidney transplant recipients, and especially those who reach kidney failure through diabetes, the survival gains the general population has enjoyed over the past two decades simply have not arrived, and that gap sits squarely in our clinics. Here are the key takeaways from this week in nephrology. First, in type 2 diabetes with chronic kidney disease, think in terms of combining agents across mechanisms rather than escalating one at a time. Second, genetic determinants of creatinine and cystatin C that have nothing to do with filtration introduce real, individual-level bias into estimated filtration rate. Reach for measured clearance when a decision hinges on the number. Third, an incidental monoclonal gammopathy in ANCA glomerulonephritis is a comorbidity marker, not a disease modifier, and did not predict kidney failure or progression to myeloma. Fourth, post-transplant cardiovascular and infection mortality has not improved in 18 years of European registry data, and the diabetes gap has not closed. And fifth, mainstreaming genomic testing into general nephrology clinics preserved diagnostic yield while tripling access, whereas a standalone phosphate app did not beat standard care. That's your roundup for This Week in Nephrology. The full transcript and references are available on the episode page in your Audio Scholar library. This is an AI-curated summary. For clinical decisions, always consult primary sources and current guidelines. See you next week. If this weekly briefing is useful, follow the show in your podcast app so new episodes arrive automatically. And a quick rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify helps other physicians discover the show. This is an automated summary generated by artificial intelligence, which can make mistakes. Always review the original source materials.